I know you all hurt inside, but do your grieving in private. The street has no sympathy.
What's the status of the investigation?
No signs of physical trauma. See, those fingerprints were on the syringe.
What the hell's that supposed to mean?
Means there's no physical evidence suggesting that his death was a homicide.
Wait a minute, Lieutenant.
Marty, everybody in this room knows that Guzman had Zito whacked.
You give me an hour with Guzman, I'll get you some proof.
We take Guzman down right or we don't take him. Internal Affairs is on the way to Metro. They want to talk to you.
This is the Vice of Miami podcast, where your hosts, Mark and Tim, review the iconic TV show Miami Vice. Set against the backdrop of Miami's vibrant nightlife and drug trade, Miami Vice followed Detective Sonny Crockett and Ricardo Tubbs and the entire OCB team as they battled the scourge of the mid and late 80s. With its unforgettable characters, eclectic fashion, and epic soundtrack, Miami Vice captured the spirit of the times. Come join us as we dive deep into the world of Miami Vice and explore the show's enduring legacy.
And with that, welcome back, Vice fans, to the Vice of Miami podcast for show number 61. Mark and I are always glad you're joining us. We hope you enjoyed our last show covering Down for the Count Part 1. So, as always, sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy the Vice of Miami podcast covering Season 3, Episode 13, Down for the Count Part 2.
And Tim, my beverage of choice is caramel apple cider from Ms. Behaven Meads in Valparaiso, Indiana. This episode is written by Dick Wolf. The teleplay is by Dick Wolf and John Shulian, directed by Richard Compton. The original air date is January 16th, 1987, and it is the 57th episode overall.
And our plot summary is, shaken and angered by Zito's death and the results of an IED investigation, Crockett, Tubbs, and Switek vow to take down Guzman. They also have to contend with a Vegas mobster who is after Guzman for cutting into his gambling action in South Florida.
And before we get into the guest stars, this is a pretty good caramel apple cider. It's not a bead, it's a cider. It's kind of sweet, nice caramely taste, a little cinnamon. Perfect for a fall night like tonight. And let's get into the guest stars and the co-stars. First up, Mark Breland and Pepe Serna. Their return is Bobby Sykes and Oswaldo Guzman. And we covered them last episode.
And our next guest star is Chris Elliott as Danny Allred, born May 31st, 1960 in New York, New York. He is an American actor and comedic writer. Elliott began his career as a comedy writer and performer on Late Night with David Letterman from 1982 to 1988, returning in 2007, winning 4 Emmys for comedy writing. His movie appearances include Liana, My Man Adam, Manhunter, The Abyss, Kingpin, Sandy Wexler, and Clara's Ghost. TV appearances include Get a Life. He was a member of the Saturday Night Live cast, Murphy Brown, Dilbert, According to Jim, King of the Hill, How I Met Your Mother, Law & Order SVU, and Schitt's Creek. Elliott married Paula Niedert in 1986, and they have 2 children.
Man, don't forget he did There's Something About Mary. He was a boogie.
Yes.
They broke out in hives. All right, next up we've got Robert Pastorelli as Vespa, born June 21st, 1954. Best known role was as Eldon Bernecki, the painter and nanny in the series Murphy Brown, from 1988 to 1998. Some notable appearances include Barney Miller, Cagney and Lacey, Hill Street Blues, Beverly Hills Cop 2, Sister Act 2, Beauty and the Beast, Dance of the Wolves, and Hook. Unfortunately, Pastorelli was found dead in his Hollywood Hills, California residence from an accidental heroin overdose on March 8th, 2004. He was 49 years old. And he has 2 daughters from previous relationships.
And our final guest stars, Joe D'Alessandro, as Alfredo Giolini. We covered Joe's bio in the season 1 episode, One-Eyed Jack.
And rounding out the co-stars, we've got Antoni Corone as George Sordoni, Kenny Enriquez as Echeverra, Joe Hess as Javier Escobar, and Roberto Moresco as Frankie.
And Mark, we have some Miami Vice in the news. Today is November 14th, but on November 10th, 2023, a Facebook posting announced that actor Chris Elliott had died. However, on November 12th, mass media reported this press release as a hoax after Chris's reps announced on the 11th that he is alive and well. All right, we're going to now begin our discussion portion for Down for the Count Part 2. It opens with Zito's funeral being held. It was a typical sovereign mood, and it was being held at the mortuary. So it was like basically a one-stop shop thing. Cubs asks if anyone recognizes anyone there, and Switek says he had six brothers and sisters, and they were really close. Castillo is seen consoling what we assume would be Zito's mom. Pastor gathers everyone around, and Switek is asked to do a eulogy, which he cuts short after a few words because he was overcome with grief. And then we head to OCB, where the entire team is plainly still in shock from the death of Zito. Castillo informs them that a forensic report says that there were no signs of physical trauma, but his fingerprints were on a syringe that was found in his arm, indicating that death was not a homicide, or at least not classified as such. And I'm in Switek. What does that mean, as we heard in our opening clip there? As they all believe Guzman had taken Zito down, and Switek says, you know, give me some time with Guzman and I'll get the evidence. Castillo says, we're taking him down right or not at all. He also tells Switek, IED wants to talk to you about Zito. Stan has a few choice snarky words to Crockett before leaving, like, nice job with whatever he said. And
I hope you're happy with the results or something like that, right? Something like that.
And I cover that in my review. Trudy tells Gina she tried to forget what happened by bringing home an old friend for the night. And Gina asks, did that help? Nope.
Nope.
And Gina breaks a pencil in half in anger.
I don't think it helped her, but probably helped her old friend.
Yes.
But it was odd this opening scene with at OCB, they're in the conference room, and then Switek is just kind of like staring off, I think, to the floor or something like that. He's at one end of the table, obviously disconnected with the whole team.
And you'll notice that throughout this episode, he's doing that. And when I wrote my notes, right, I said, Stan just keeps stewing. He's like simmering. He's simmering.
He's very stoic, yes. Quiet. Because usually, you know, he'll come up with something to say, mm-hmm, a quick
one-liner.
You know, something. Mm-hmm. Yep. So now mm-hmm. we fast forward to the IAD, Internal Affairs Division. Switek here is being questioned by two IAD guys about Zito's drinking habits. And according to Switek, Zito, he's been sober for 5 years and never missed a single AA meeting. And he's basically just shoving it back in these guys' faces like, hey, you know, he's a clean guy. I've never seen him do anything bad. And then he basically storms out when they ask him about Zito's drug use, but he doesn't storm out before telling them to go to hell. So now we're at just outside of Zito's apartment, Crockett and Tubbs are, and they get invited in by, I'm assuming, the landlord. And Crockett and Tubbs, they find Harriet, his goldfish he got when his house blew up. They discover with all his tchotchkes that he was an avid snow globe collector. And then Crockett is pretty much lamenting that we're working with someone for 7 years, yet you hardly know them. They had no idea that he collected this stuff. So the apartment manager gives Tubbs a handful of mail and asks that if they take anything, give her a receipt. And then they find in his mail a certified letter notice that wasn't picked up. So what do they do? Obviously going to go to the post office here. And sure enough, Crockett comes out with this certified letter, and it contained Guzman's gambling book sent to Zito from Moon. That's where it happened. That's where it went. You'll never find it. Okay, Moon, you're gone. Well, he mailed it to Zito. A brief perusal of this book shows that it's pretty much written in code. And Crockett said, we're just going to have Gina and Trudy check this over, send it to a lab, see what they could figure out.
I've been hauling his mail. Didn't didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, we'll take care of it.
You know, you guys take anything, I'm gonna need a receipt.
Sonny, check this out.
What you got?
Certified mail. Wasn't picked up.
Name, no return address. It's made out of gator. However, I can't imagine any self-respecting gator would be caught dead in this.
You don't give an idea who could have such bad taste?
Larry, this is a slimy chili pepper Guzman's book. My guess is you figure what's in it, you can put him away. Move.
8 to 5, this one got him whacked.
In some sort of alphanumeric code. Great.
I don't even have my Captain Midnight decoder ring.
These things cost a ton. Probably because they got serial numbers. Maybe Gina and Trudy can run it down. There's only a couple of stores that carry them.
How about a little Orphan Annie decoder pin?
Yeah. No, Captain Midnight, we're going to have to do a little... We're going to have to do a little research and see if that's something that actually existed. But there's one thing that his house blew up. That's when he got harried after that.
Yep.
But when did he collect all these snow globes? It had to be after his house blew up.
Yeah. And the other thing, what's with all these books? And what was it last season? A briefcase had to be a specific briefcase that was like some
alligator. Yes. Yeah, alligator.
Just go to the dollar store, get your cheap ass briefcase.
All right. Now we're at Guzman's, and Golo Goose is getting a rub down while one of his goons says they can't find Sykes. He hasn't been seen in over a week, but who shows up? None other than Sykes. Guzman offers his condolences about Zito and says he'd like to manage him. Sykes tells him, you know, he has no convincing is needed. He'll go with Guzman. Meanwhile, in Las Vegas, mobster Alfredo Giolini has learned of Guzman's huge profits from gambling in Miami, an enterprise his organization had previously dominated, and he decides to teach him a lesson about turf. He places a call to Vespa to find out about Guzman and his connections and says he wants him taken care of and don't worry if it's messy. The mess will scare others away. They'll think twice about it. The FBI has a tap on Giolini's phone, picks up the call, and sends an agent down to Miami to warn Vice that Godzilla's coming to pay them a visit. I believe he did. He was also talking about Burnett and Cooper, and that's when they ran their names and they found out that they were Vice.
Godzilla. Mm-hmm. Godzilla's coming. So now we're at OCB here. Gina and Trudy find that the customized gator-covered gambling book either belongs to Guzman or a bishop in the church. Crockett has them contact a cryptographer who is an old war buddy named Danny Allred, who can decode the book faster than any lab can. Wytek is still, you could see, he's still in his grief-stricken days here, stewing, as you said, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Castillo comes in and says that IAD is officially stating Zito's death as an OD, and I put down mildly pissing off Crockett and Tubbs. Tubbs even mentions that Zito was afraid of needles, especially... They notice when OCB had their blood drive, he didn't want nothing to do with it. And Castillo says, the book is closed on Zito unless new evidence arises. Now they gotta clear his name and let alone find Guzman and all this stuff. Anyway, Guzman's attorney, Sardoni, calls Crockett for a meet with Guzman. So anyway, Crockett and Tubbs, they go to meet with the Goose, who tells them that Sykes is now with him. Crockett, which is actually Burnett, and him, they agree to set up the deal with the satellite network. And I kind of noticed, you know, Crockett was fishing for Goose to say that he whacked Zito, but he didn't bite. If you watch the episode, you could tell just by the way he was interacting and saying stuff. He was fishing. He was fishing, but no go. So anyways, right after the meet, Tubbs reminds Crockett that, hey, don't forget, we don't have no satellite network. So if he wants to play ball with us, we're going to fall flat on our face here. And they pretty much have no prayer with Guzman. Crockett plans to stay on it until Guzman is in jail and Zito's name is cleared.
Just as a little update here, there was such thing as called Captain Midnight. You got to go back to, it was a radio show from 1938 to 49. Then it was on a TV show, 1954, lasted 2 seasons. IMDb gave it a rating of 7.8 out of 10.
Holy cow.
And here's your synopsis. Daring masked aviator Captain Midnight must stop Ivan Shark from obtaining a device that will enable his bombers to unleash a furious reign of terror.
The only captain I know is Captain Video in the Video Rangers.
In the Video Rangers. Anyway, now we're at an airstrip, and it seemed like it was more like a private airfield. It wasn't like Miami International type of stuff. And Gina stopped, and Trudy stopped by to meet with Alred, Chris Elliott in character, while an FBI agent is observing. He's none too obvious, but it seems like they camp out there watching Alred. I kind of got that out of that.
What was it? A Dodge Diplomat with the cop wheels on it, you know, the black wall wheels, yeah, with the one center hubcap. And I think it said FBI on the side of the door or something like that. It had a decal, and they're just driving up and down. Really?
And they said he had to have the book. He said, "I'll Dakota by the next day. His boat is an old aircraft now with high tech for that time gear, but he'll have the work done by noon the next day." Gene and Trudy were pressing him to get it done ASAP.
"Hey, Crockett said you could break the code in a hurry."
"In a hurry? Oh, now come on, what's a hurry? Is that just some measure of time that can only be defined by law enforcement officers? Or is it perhaps that brief period in which you could go, I don't know, out of the smoke or listen to a cut off the new Peter Gabriel album? Who's really to say what it is?"
"Why don't we say 4 this afternoon?"
"I see, so in by 10, out by 4. Let me ask you something. Do I look like a dry cleaner?"
"Ace cryptographer, right?"
"Once."
"That when you met Crockett?"
"Play coup. Class of 71. Graduation was a bitch."
So now we have Giolini, arrives in Miami, probably at Miami International, and meets with Vespa and wants to know why he's such a screw-up. Vespa says every time Sordoni puts a bet down on a fight, he wins. Vespa gives info on Crockett and Tubbs as well. Giolini wants to meet with Sordoni, Burnett, and Cooper in a group grope.
Yeah, when he said that, I'm like, oh, well, yeah, he wants to kill three birds with one stone, I guess, right?
Yes. En route to the meet, Crockett and Tubbs are caught in a trap by Vespa and another goon car, the thugs, but they manage to wreck their pursuers' cars after a lengthy chase, which ends in a game of chicken.
And one thing I noticed in this, Tim, I call it one of a goofs or something. Neat observation. After and Crockett Tubbs notice that they're being tailed, and as they're driving by, you can see a bike cop holding traffic, obviously for the shoot of the scene here. You can see him standing next to the bike, and the light has the blue light flashing. It was kind of like, as they're looking out the window, you could just see him. Obviously, he's holding the traffic there. So take a peek at it, people. So now we're at OCB. Castillo asks Crockett if he's got a problem he should know about as the FBI is on their way down. FBI agent says that Giolini, we're all going to have problems with that. We'll call him G.
Pierre von Wurzel. I'll just call you Adolf.
He says that he's a combination of Bugsy Siegel and Charles Manson, and he's been taking a huge loss on boxing bets to Guzman, and he pretty much wants him dead. And oh yeah, possibly Crockett and Tubbs too, just to throw that in the mix. Crockett says good that Giolini has interest in them, but the FBI guy says no, bad. You already lost one cop too many.
"So you have the Guzman.
I never heard of him until a certain Alfredo Giolini started acting nuts."
"Giolini?
Kind of a combination of Bugsy Siegel and Charles Manson. A Vegas boy. He handles the bulk of the gambling action in South Florida. But lately, he's taken a bath on boxing."
"To Guzman.
And now Giolini's in Miami to stuff him in a garbage disposal head first."
"I love it."
"Not if Burnett and Cooper are in there with them."
"One more time."
"Your alter egos. We ran an undercover ID on them.
And listening to Giolini on tape.
My guess is he's interested in them, too."
"Good."
"No, bad. You've already lost one cop too many."
So Gina and Trudy, they go back to see Allred, who's got the book decoded. He's talking to them and finds that Guzman is building up fighters, driving the odds way up, and then having the fighters take a fall to a no-name, making some huge bank here. And his latest is going to be Sykes. And then this is all the while, this FBI car is driving back and forth. I think it went by like 5 times, back and forth. Just picture you're having a garage sale and you got those people driving by slow, looking out the window, not stopping to see what you got for sale, but just keep on driving by like the schmucks they are.
All right. So now we got Giulini meeting with Sordoni. We're not sure if this was an apartment or if this was a crib that was owned by Giulini when he comes into South Florida. And he threatens his family unless Sordoni tells him all of Guzman's activities. Sordoni's turning a blubbering fool here because he gave him one address and he said, "Who lives here? That's my parents. Who lives here? That's my house." And then that's when he's threatening a family and everything like that. Then we are at OCB and Castillo has a one-on-one conversation with Stan. And he tells him he wants him off the case because he's still out of it. But, you know, Stan promises to carry his weight and says that Zito would do all he can to clear his name if the tables were turned. He's tasked with running surveillance on Guzman. And I believe Castillo had said something to the like of, you know, "I want to pull you off of, but we don't have anybody else."
Like nowadays, nobody's got the manpower. Nobody wants to fucking work. Excuse my link. Nobody wants to work. Oops, have to beep that.
So now we have Croc and Tubbs. They're on the street. Crockett's, you know, they're going back and forth. And he plans to pitch his deal with the Sun Belt satellite to Giulini, hoping he will bite, which will cause a war between Giulini and Guzman. They see Switek in the van listening in on the Goose.
So Crock and Tubbs, they go to the boxing gym here to go see Sykes, see what's up. He wants nothing to do with them. "Nope, get away from me. You're done." Because they did lie and they used him like they always do, right? So either way, they want to now help him out. Imagine that. He says pretty much stay away because he wants to kill Guzman himself for all what he did. So Croc and Tubbs now, they go to see G.
I'll just call you Adolf.
To pitch the satellite deal to him, thinking, hey, maybe we'll get this guy a bigger deal and then kick Guzman out. This is all their plan anyways. And play with the big boys here. He says he can get fighters from Guzman who won't be needing them any soon. So now we're at OCB here. Crockett says that they're both smelling blood and they need direction as far as Giulini and Guzman. Switek is going to watch over Giulini, surveillance-wise. And then Gina and Trudy bring in a printout of the book that Allred decoded. And they find Guzman's made over $1 million in 6 months on simple fights with Giulini, pretty much eating all of the losses, or most of them at least. Castillo orders 24-hour surveillance on both Giulini and Guzman.
And now we're back at Guz's place where Cooper and Burnett pay him a visit and cancel their deal with him, citing their meeting with Giulini. Guz is bewildered on them cutting ties with him. They leave, and that's when Guz orders a hit on Giulini and tells Sordoni that he has to set it up. Then we have Stan as a delivery man who brings a copy of the decoded book to Giulini, who realizes how big a hit he has taken because of Guzman, who is fixing his fights to make money. He is questioning one of the goons and why he didn't notice this. Sordoni calls Giulini to let him know about the Guzman hit ordered on him and that Guzman will be at his jewelry shop at the mall that evening where he has his bookmaking operations in a back room. Stan monitors this call but chooses not to tell anyone about it even after Gina calls him with essentially the same information he just heard.
So now later on at OCB with pretty much 14 minutes left before the hit's going to go down, Switek here, he's got second thoughts about keeping quiet on the time and the place of the hit and calls Crockett and tells him what he heard. Crockett and Dubs pretty much beat feet over to the mall where the jewelry store is at. So now we're at the jewelry store where Giulini's goons, they arrive at the jewelry store after Guz does his business and a shootout pretty much entails with Guzman and his men, as well as Crockett and Tubbs and Switek. Pretty much all the goons are killed, and Guzman runs to the second floor, briefly taking a woman hostage before Switek, thinking about Zito. I think he had a flashback here, maybe, or you get a scene.
Where he found him with the hype in his arm, yes.
Yep.
He did.
Switek here shoots Guzman, who dramatically falls through this window to the first floor. Oh, the end of the Guz. So later on the St. Vitus dance, after Zito's name is cleared, Crockett, Tubbs, Switek, and Sykes toast to Zito's memory.
"You know, for a while there, I didn't think we'd clear Larry's name.
It's done, man.
I still find myself talking to him when I'm in the van.
Hey, he has a partner. The way a partner should be.
Here you go, buddy.
Hey, Ben.
Last one.
Oh, yeah. I'll stick to orange juice. Okay, sorry.
Sonny, better be careful. People might think you're fraternizing with the enemy.
To Lawrence Zito. A cop. A man. And a great friend.
To Larry.
To Larry.
Okay, the rating for this episode, IMDb gives this an 8.2. Tim, give us your thoughts here, please.
Right. You know, Mark, I don't agree with this rating. The twist in this plot was the addition of Alfredo Giolini as the Vegas mobster who arrives in Miami to dispose of Guzman for cutting into his gambling action, which the Vegas mob controls. The OCB team is distraught by the death of Zito, but has to move forward to bring down Guzman. And I'll make further comment about that in a, towards the end of our show. Bobby Sykes was non-existent. He was there, you know, basically went to see Guzman. Then they saw him at the gym and then he's gone. There's nothing about him because the last thing he left Crockett and Tubbs with is that I'm going to kill Guzman if he found out that he's the one that actually did the deed on Zito. After the takedown of Guzman and Giolini's goons, Giolini disappeared. I know he had to warm up my plane. I'm getting out of here. But what happened to him? I mean, did they go after him? Did they get him? I mean, he obviously ordered a hit, so he'd be on a hook for that. Don't know. One bright spot was that Switek having a change of heart when he called Sonny to let him know about the hit on Guzman. He wanted to do it right. Also, there was just a snide comment by Stan inferring it was Sonny's fault that Larry was killed. And I really thought there was going to be a hell of a lot more blowback than that. I don't know. It lacked a little pizzazz for me. I thought there was going to be a lot more than that.
Right. Probably a lot more between the Switek and whose fault it was, mm-hmm. other than Guzman putting Zito in that position. And obviously that was Crockett.
Yep.
I was actually surprised at how much better this episode ended up being. It had more players, a slightly thicker plot, and definitely more excitement. The Vice team pretty much found themselves kind of backed against the wall in the obvious bullcrap report on Zito being dead from an OD rather than being killed and having to find that needle in several haystacks to get Guzman to blame for this and clear Zito's name. The one open question I have is, how did Zito's record and death get cleared? I mean, what did they find? They were tasked into finding evidence on Guzman to link Guzman to his killing, but the book just showed his money trail and how he screwed Giolini. The street didn't really lead to Zito there, kind of. The story in the death of Zito himself was very underwhelming. Both episodes. It just lacked. Let's just say that. He maybe should have died in this episode for Sykes, or to get Sykes out of trouble from Guzman or something along those lines, kind of like a martyr type thing, you know. But having him die in the first episode, allegedly by an OD, when it never was series wide so far shown that he did drugs or anything like that, I could see, mm-hmm. maybe if he started getting into it, yeah, that story would work. But no, just didn't work. But I gather it was just pretty much revenge for not contracting with Guzman. That's the only plausible thing I got. And that's pretty much weak. It lacks suspense. Both episodes lack suspense and the buildup to the eventual death, like I said, of Zito. Think of this, if anybody knows, MASH back in the 70s and 80s, they pretty much cut the knees from underneath all of us when Henry Blake went home. He was discharged. Then Radar came into the ER and said he died on the way home from a plane crash. That was more impactful and stung very hard. Zito's death? Anyways, rest in peace, Zito. Good cop, good partner, good friend, and the good brother, right?
Now we have music for this episode. We have Blind Faith by Corey Hart, and that was at Zito's funeral. All Along the Watchtower by the Jimi Hendrix Experience, played in Allred's Plane, Don't Need a Gun by Billy Idol during the car chase, I Want to Make the World Turn Around by the Steve Miller Band, and that's when Switek decided to tell Crockett about the hit and then drive to the mall.
And some Jan Hammer music. We've got Evan. That's the opening recap of the previous episode. Lombard Trial. That's when the Giulini scenes and the shootout at the mall. And One Way Out. That's where Switek toasts to Zito's memory on the St. Vitus dance.
And now on to some Goofs fun facts and location. Our first fun fact. This is the only two-part episode that was actually originally aired in two parts. Brothers Keeper, The Prodigal Son, and Free Fall originally aired as two-hour episodes that were changed to two-part episodes in syndication.
Our first location here, the Westwood Hills Christian Church, 10808 La Conta Avenue, Los Angeles. That was the church and the mortuary exterior for Zito's funeral.
And then we have Town and Country Mall, 8505 Mills Drive, Kendall, and that is the shootout at the mall.
And the last goof here, we've got when Crockett and Tubbs and Switek enter the mall to stop the hit at the end of the episode, Tubbs has clearly been replaced by a stand-in. What's more, Tubbs disappears altogether after this shot and does not participate in the final gunfight at all. Maybe he was checking out some chick at the TCBY or Cinnabon.
There you go. Time for our trivia portion of this episode. In last episode, we asked, in the conference room at OCB, behind Crockett, what poster is hanging up? For what crime? The pillowcase rapist.
Anyway, this show's trivia question is, when the high-speed evasive chase ends with a second mobster's car rolling over, Crockett stops just before exiting under a bridge. On that bridge, what was written on the wall? You can post your answers on this episode's Facebook post, or you can email us at miamivice@duck.com. And we've arrived at Snerd's Chalkboard of Wisdom, where we hope to inspire, enlighten, or make you snicker a little bit. In both the world of Miami Vice and our current world at large, we encounter many challenges we work to overcome. In the interest of creating a family-friendly atmosphere through the show and our social media, we'd like to offer some parting thoughts. A simple quote, phrase, or words of encouragement are for any quip to our listeners. Because without you, our friends, we'd just be talking to ourselves. And we say friends because that's what we consider all of you who follow our show and social media. This episode's quote is, being challenged in life is inevitable. Being defeated is optional. And that's from Roger Crawford.
And now before we wrap up, I just wanted to talk a little bit about how Castillo handled Zito's death. When he said, and we already had this in our opening clip, I know you all hurt inside, but do your grieving in private. The street has no sympathy. That's how it was done then. Suck it up, move on. Yes, you lost a friend, but we have work to do. I personally went through this, and I've shared this before. I believe it was in our first season after the Evan episode that, you know, I went through a suicide of a colleague on the fire department, and that's exactly what we did. We moved on. 3 days later, our crew was back at work. We were relieved of duty that night, but we were back at work. I would hope nowadays with the advent of peer support and a lot more focus on mental health that this would not happen. In all honesty or reality, the OCB team would definitely have not been assigned that case. It would have went, well, they classified as not a homicide, but it would have had to go to somebody else. There's just no way. Stan was a zombie for most of the episode. With good reason, but all of them were, but yet they were asked to move on. And it was kind of cold and callous on Castillo's part. He's being matter of fact because he had these, their leader, to grieve in private. It just wouldn't work. And I'll say this out there to our listeners that if you ever are in a situation where, and not that you're all police officers or anything like that, but if you would lose somebody close, if something in your life profoundly affects you, definitely get the help needed to process and get through it, because they're going to move forward. We're going to go into another episode. How much time has passed since then? Do they even work this in there, or is toasting Zito at the end, is that it, done and over?
Their closure.
Is that their closure, or is that not? Don't know. We'll see as we move forward. And so that's a wrap for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in and to join us on this review. We hope you found this episode exciting and entertaining. If you enjoyed it, please consider subscribing to our podcast and following us on our social media channels to stay updated on our latest episodes. On Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, we are Vice of Miami Podcast. Your support means everything to us, and if you have a spare moment, we would be incredibly grateful if you could leave us a rating and review on those channels. Thanks again for listening, and we can't wait to share more with you soon. So we'll catch you next time on the Vice of Miami Podcast on show number 62, covering episode 14, Cuba Libre. Now,
good luck, pal.